from deep inside your radio.
From the original Le Show Dome, back where it belongs, for a while, and then it goes away. Goes someplace else. Ladies and gentlemen, maybe the time when we've put all our eggs in the Musharraf basket, maybe that time is coming to an end. According to the Taipei Times, I know it should be in news outside the bubble, but there's so much of that today that I've sprung this. The U.S. is now tilting towards Pakistan's army elite and moderate forces at the expense of President General, General President Perv. In a high-stakes move to save an ally, a key ally in the war on terror, if there be such, according to analysts. The analysts have sensed a U.S. policy shift in the last few days that appears to have only been reinforced by the visit last weekend to Pakistan of U.S. Deputy Secretary of State John Negroponte. Of course, means Black Bridge, doesn't it? Despite the fact that Musharraf re-released Benazir Bhutto from house arrest to celebrate Negroponte's arrival and busted some Taliban. Look what I'm doing. Negroponte, of course, urged him to call off the emergency, although President Bush on ABC this week said he's a friend of democracy. Because that state of emergency is going to help the elections, according to Musharraf. Strange. Australia didn't need a state of emergency for their election. They did just fine. The army run by a professional pro-Western elite, according to the Taipei Times, is the key to the U.S.-led war on terrorism. Apropos of which, ladies and gentlemen, two different stories in the nation's two leading national Sunday newspapers. Wall Street Journal doesn't publish on Sunday yet, but give Rupert 6 months. But here, from the New York Times, Deadline Washington, with American military successes outpacing political gains in Iraq, the Bush administration has lowered its expectation of quickly achieving major steps toward unifying the country, lowering our Iraqi expectations again, according to the New York Times. According to the Washington Post, a White House assessment of the war in Afghanistan has concluded that wide-ranging strategic goals the Bush administration set for this year have not been met. Zero for two, I read that. The evaluation this month by the National Security Council of Afghanistan followed an in-depth review late last year that laid out a series of projected improvements for this year, including progress in security, governance, and the economy. But the latest assessment concluded that only individual battles against Taliban fighters has shown improvement. Improvements in the other areas. In other words, the same deal. Tactical success, strategic. This judgment reflects sharp differences between the U.S. military and intelligence officials on where the Afghan war is headed. Intelligence analysts highlight the Taliban's unchallenged expansion into new territory, an increase in opium poppy cultivation, and the weakness of the government of President Karzai as signs the war effort is deteriorating. So it's the same deal. Military likes the tactical successes, the intelligence people say. Yes, but what are we doing? Senior White House officials, according to the Washington Post, privately express pessimism about Afghanistan. There's anxiety about the current upheaval next door in Pakistan. But in all honesty, I think it's too early to tell right now, says a senior administration official. Okay, we'll give you a few more months. What do you want? So there it is, ladies and gentlemen. The Times says the administration is lowering expectations on Iraq. The Post says it's lowering expectations on Afghanistan. Missions non-accomplished. Do you think that's fair? Hello, welcome to the show. from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this Thanksgiving weekend edition of the program. It's a holiday weekend, and that's an excuse for taking it easy, don't you know? So the recorded portions of today's program will be special. Oh, God, they'll be special. Over the past few months, I've been, from time to time, dispensing musical tributes to departing members of the Bush administration for a project which, in my own head, I've been calling Songs of the Bushmen, because I envision, you know, a piece of cover art, which is basically the president with a bone through his nose. That may never be a physical object, but today we'll reprise some of those musical numbers for your listening dyspepsia. But first, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
A hospital has apologized for accidentally giving Hollywood star Dennis Quaid's newborn twins a massive drug overdose. The babies were allegedly mistakenly given 10,000 units of the blood thinner heparin instead of 10 units. The drug is used to prevent blood clots. It is believed both of Quaid's children will recover from the overdose. Bosses at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles have apologized to Quaid and his wife. The chief medical officer called the incident preventable and was caused by a failure to follow our standard policies and procedures. There is no excuse, he says. It's believed the nurse on duty grabbed the wrong dosage. Sorry for coughing. The radio station WNCI. Where are they? They're in Ohio. Has apologized for airing a parody song that some central Ohio Latinos considered offensive. The station agreed not to play the song again. The station posted the apology on its website Wednesday after reviewing the lyrics of the song. The song, called Bunch of Mexicans to the tune of David Bowie's Young Americans, describes a group of 14 Mexicans misunderstanding orders at a fast food restaurant, working as landscapers, traveling in packs, and evading immigration authorities. The song was written and performed by Dave Kalin, half of the Morning Zoo team, Dave and Jimmy. It's aired a few times over the past year, but attracted the attention of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition this week. Because they're late. Saying his acceptance of bribes constitutes a cancer on the body politic, U.S. District Judge Sarah Vance sentenced New Orleans former city councilman Oliver Thomas to 37 months in jail. Considered the top contender to be the city's next mayor, Thomas is now presumably finished in elective politics. In an emotional speech to the judge, Thomas apologized to the citizens of New Orleans for his actions and threw himself at the court's mercy. He also disputed prosecutors' claim revealed in court filings this week that he had knowledge of other crimes but would not provide it to the government. The prosecution said Thomas said he refused to be a rat. The former fiancé of TV's Bill Nye has apologized for poisoning plants in his garden. Blair Tindall. Well, Bill Nye is the science guy, so Blair Tindall would be his ex-Kindle, I guess, is seeking to have a requested restraining order against her lifted. Nye sought the order to prevent Tindall from contacting him, from coming near his home after he allegedly spotted his ex dressed in black and acting suspiciously near his property. Tindall now claims she is, quote, terribly sorry for what I did, unquote. Also sorry this week, British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, for the loss of 25 million child benefit records. The data on two missing discs includes names, dates of birth, bank, and address details. The Prime Minister, during a heated Prime Minister's questions period, said, quote, I profoundly regret and apologize for the inconvenience and worries that have been caused to millions of families who receive child benefits. He also said, the idea that we are complacent about this is quite ridiculous. He added, there is no excuse for not following proper procedures. Tell that to the folks at Cedars. Apologies from two different bishoprics this week. Yes, it's a word. Look it up. Bug me. Spain's most senior bishop has issued an unprecedented apology for the Roman Catholic Church's role in the Spanish Civil War. On Until now, the church has always highlighted its role as a victim in the war. Last month, Pope Benedict beatified nearly 500 Spanish priests and nuns who were killed in the years before and during the conflict. This week, however, the head of Spain's Episcopal Conference, don't misjudge the name, they're Roman Catholics, said the church must also seek forgiveness for concrete acts during the strife-torn period. On many occasions, we should ask for forgiveness and change direction. Many bishops in the audience appeared stunned by the unexpected apology. And Dateline Spokane, in a more expected apology from a Roman Catholic clergyman, at a prayer service in a Roman Catholic parish where at least two priests who sexually abused children once worked, Bishop William Skylstad apologized and asked parishioners' forgiveness. That apology was mandated by terms of a $48 million bankruptcy settlement. He planned similar prayer services in about 30 of the 82 parishes in his diocese in eastern Washington. The services are part of a settlement to bring the diocese out of Chapter 11, precipitated by lawsuits filed by people who had been abused. Back to Louisiana for a moment. A state representative in a runoff election infuriated civil rights leaders a couple weeks ago after she ended a conversation with the mother of the NAACP's local president by saying, "Talk to you later, Buckwheat." State Representative Carla Blanchard D'Artaz of Morgan City acknowledged she made the remark during a telephone conversation to thank the NAACP's local president for driving voters to the polls. Odd way to express your thanks, you might think. Buckwheat, of course, was a black child character in the Little Rascal comedies of the 30s and 40s, viewed as a racial stereotype demeaning to African Americans. Boykin's son is the NAACP's president in Terrebonne Parish, southwest, of New Orleans. D'Artaz now says, "I made an insensitive comment when speaking with Hazel Boykin, and I have apologized to the Boykin family and publicly for my choice of words. I have a strong record of fighting for issues important to the African-American community," she says. She did not profess ignorance of the Little Rascals. The Prime Minister of the British Columbia in Canada, the Canadian-British Columbia province, publicly apologized to the mother of Robert Jankanski, a 40-year-old Polish immigrant who died after being electrocuted by the police at the airport in Vancouver last month. British Columbia government also announced a full public inquiry into the death of the man, and the use of tasers will be launched. Jankanski had never flown by plane before. He didn't know English and had difficulty finding his mother after hours of wandering around the baggage reclaim concourse. He was finally overcome with frustration and threw a chair at a door of the hall. Policeman at the airport decided he was acting aggressively and stunned him twice with a taser. Jankanski died in pain shortly afterwards. In a video of the incident made by a tourist, it's possible to see the man was not putting up resistance. Taser killed a guy. A Los Angeles City Council member apologized this week to a handful of San Fernando Valley residents, saying a phone message left by a planning department employee suggesting the fix was in for a controversial condominium project was not business as usual at City Hall. Councilman Ed Reyes offered his deepest apologies one day after he heard a recording of a city planner who, thinking he'd called the project's developer, promised it would be approved, quote, "no matter what." Says Reyes, "It gives us a black eye when you have that kind of contact, when you have a staff person making a statement before the committee even looks at the case." The apology was not enough to reassure other council members who moved to postpone a vote on the project until next week. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, isn't it? Yeah, I think it is. So one of the people who has left the Bush administration this year, one of the Bushmen departing, of course, was the man known as Bush's brain, the architect. Bush called him the architect of his 2004 electoral victory. He also called him turd blossom, which is a Texanism. It's a flower that grows you know where. Karl Rove, gone but not forgotten.
Well, they call me the architect, they call me Bush's brain. 2 times we went campaigning, 2 times we had champagne. I helped to build his legend, he helped to build my myth. Wanna spend more time with family, just need time to find the family to spend it with. Oh, the Turd Blossom Special is taking me home, never more to roam, till I got a book that I have to promote, or a special campaign to help black people vote. I'm as free as a bird, won't be deterred. I'm on the Turd Blossom Special. Till I can buy me a boat. Oh, I sliced and diced the voters like pigs on a spit. Any issue that divided was the one we'd really hit. Oh, I would gerrymander for the commander-in-chief. He was the decider and the believer. I was the decisions and the belief. Oh, the Turd Blossom Special is taking me home, where I won't need a comb, till I meet that special candidate that I can advise and email him encrypted, cause that would be wise. I won't breathe a word, lest the deal be disinterred. I'm on the Turd Blossom Special. In my civilian guise. Oh, he called me Turd Blossom, that's what he liked to do. I called him the boss, and that amused him too. We built a majority that would last for years to come. But the war refused to end, and the man who was the boss soon became the bum. Oh, the Turd Blossom Special is taking me home, where the cars drip with chrome, till I got a book that I have to promote, or a big campaign to help some black people vote. Don't be unduly stirred by the boldness of the word. I'm on the Turd Blossom Special. Till I can buy me a boat. Till I can buy me a boat. Till I can buy me a boat.
Ferry boats cruising through the ports. land of dreams, the home of various folks. That's why I just can't get New Orleans off my mind. Fun dancing and music all the time. So if you don't see me, that's where I'm gonna be. 'Cause I just can't get New Orleans off my mind. And that's what I'm trying to tell you.
Who are the foreign fighters in Iraq? You will find out on News from Outside the Bubble moments from now here on the show. But first, Paul Wolfowitz was one of the Bushmen to depart, not the administration. He had already done that. He departed from his sinecure, to which he jumped after he was pushed out of the administration as Deputy Defense Secretary, which was the World Bank. And he was pushed out this year. Not because he was a bad banker. The head of the World Bank doesn't really do much banking, as it turns out. But Paul Wolfowitz was pushed out because he had hired his squeeze, a woman named Shahariza, and had given her raise after raise. Raises for Riza, you might say. Paul Wolfowitz, now, he was, of course, famously the guy who said that the Iraq War would pay for itself from the oil revenues and that there was no history of ethnic conflict in Iraq. He said that in sworn testimony at the Senate before the war began. So he's enjoying his very own kind of glory right now.
A thinking man's fighter, a warrior's speaker bark. Iraq was what he wanted, and he wouldn't leave a mark. He knew nothing of the country, he spoke with iron will. They had no ethnic conflicts, and their oil would pay. Much too wily to be the first to walk the plank. So the wolf got out and ran directly to the bank. Directly to the bank. He's the wolf on the run. The wolf on the run. He don't need no gun. His words always stun. Shahariza had a commither point of view. The trap she laid and snared him in a menage a deux. So he just tried to make her whole. The bankers lost their rags. The wolf is on the move again. Shahariza packed his bags. Yeah, Shahariza packed his bags. He's the wolf on the run. The wolf on the run. He don't need no gun. His words always stun.
He was somewhere stuck in time. The past was vague, the future blind. There were no hooks to hang his schemes for the man who could not dream. Sigmund Freud, Carl Jung, the canvas blank when dreams won't come. No rainbow rivers could run deep for the man who could not dream. When he traveled for a while with tales to tell but could not lie, all the worlds he could not see. He danced but he had two left feet. Romance came with a price. She stayed till she spent his last dime. He didn't mind. What does it mean for the man who could not dream?
This is Le Show, and now, news from outside the bubble. More than 40% of the foreign fighters who entered Iraq to join the insurgency in the past year were citizens of Iran? No. Syria? No. Pakistan? No. Afghanistan? No. Give up? Saudi Arabia. This is according to detailed information seized from a camp used by them and revealed this week in the British newspaper The Guardian. Documents and computers found by the U.S. Army at Sinjar. Sinjar?
Yes, sir.
On the Iraqi-Syrian border revealed that the other single largest group came from Libya, which is now being rehabilitated as a reliable ally of the United States. Cute. Overall, U.S. officials reported the number of foreign fighters entering this year dropped, partly due to the raid at Sinjar. Sinjar?
Yes, sir.
Saudi Arabia, former home of Osama bin Laden and 15 of the 19 September 11th hijackers. Gee, really? Has cracked down hard on al-Qaeda in recent years. Saudi intelligence works closely with its U.S. counterparts, but there have been long suspicions that the country's most dangerous jihadis have been exported to Iraq. The U.S., Britain, and others have praised the Saudis for their efforts. Through three members of Iraq's, also from The Guardian, three members of Iraq's Olympic soccer team and one of the team's assistant coaches have deserted their side to seek asylum in Australia. The Iraqi team was down under to play a qualifying match for the Beijing Olympics. This is apropos of the improving security situation in Iraq. Iraq's Soccer Federation Secretary General Tariq Ahmed said the four men disappeared from the team's quarters a week ago. They did not arrive at the airport for their scheduled departure. The assistant coach later rang his fellow team officials and told him he and the three players had stayed on and were going to seek asylum. "It's because of the deteriorated security situation and violence against athletes in Iraq," said Ahmad. "We all face the same danger, but it doesn't mean one should so easily abandon his team and defame his country's reputation. This will cause poor morale and have a bad psychological effect on the other players. They should have waited until finishing the qualifying round and they could go wherever they want. This only shows disloyalty to the country," unquote. Iraq is scheduled to play Lebanon and Syria. The Iraq national team's successes in the past three years have provided a welcome distraction, of course. Athletes and sports officials have been frequent targets of violence, and some have been subjected to threats, kidnappings, even assassination attempts. Three members of the national team, which differs from the Olympic team but shares some of the same players, also refused to return home after victory in the Asia Cup. Now to Afghanistan. According to The Guardian, the Taliban have a permanent presence in 54% of the country, and it's in serious danger of falling into Taliban hands, according to a report by an independent think tank with long experience in the area. The insurgents now control, quote, vast swathes of unchallenged territory, including rural areas, some district centers, and important road arteries, the council says in a report released this week. On the basis of what it calls exclusive research, it warns the insurgency is also exercising, quote, a significant amount of psychological control, gaining more and more political legitimacy in the minds of the Afghan people, who have a long history of shifting alliances and regime change. It also says the territory controlled by the Taliban has increased and the front line is getting closer to Kabul, a warning echoed by the UN, which says more and more of the country is becoming a no-go area for Western aid workers. From the Times of London, governmental corruption in Afghanistan has become endemic, and bribes to secure police and administrative positions along provincial drug routes are an established procedure. Quote, the British public would be up in arms if they knew that the district appointments in the south for which British soldiers are dying are there just to protect drug routes, unquote, one analyst. Western and Afghan officials are also alarmed at how narco-kleptocracy has extended its grip around President Karzai, a figure regarded by some as increasingly isolated by a cadre of corrupt officials. The people around him tell him of a cuckoo land, says a Pashtun member of parliament, who's both a friend and critic of Karzai. His circles within a small mafia ring who are supporting the destruction of the system. They have spread like a cancer in Afghanistan, unquote. The Ministry of Interior, says the Times, key to establishing security in the country, remains the worst offender. Sounds like what else? What other country? Doesn't this sound like just two countries with the same deal? Disaffected police officers have named prime recipients of bribes. The lawmen say they categorize Afghanistan's 34 provinces as A, B, or C states. A denotes those with the highest potential profits for drug running. The bribes to buy a position in an A-grade province can be up to $300,000. The rewards are even bigger, up to $400,000 a month from heroin smuggling. To buy a position as a detective in any province, you pay $10,000, said one police colonel, now on indefinite leave because he refused to pay a bribe. Then you pay your superior a cut of the money you make through bribes or trafficking. One former governor told the Times of London that every judge in his province was corrupt. He said there were cases of police handing detainees to the Taliban or helping to transport Taliban commanders from one province to another. The government has essentially collapsed, he said. It has lost its meaning in the provinces, it has lost the security situation, and lost its grip on civil servants, unquote. One analyst in Kabul said, it's not Afghan culture, it's a culture of impunity. We, the international community, created it. We came in 2001 with cases of cash and made certain people untouchables. Maybe this is why this guy says this. One of Australia's top defense experts says the United States-led coalition, the Australians are pulling their troops out, cannot win the conflict in either Iraq or Afghanistan. Professor Hugh White, head of Canberra's Strategic and Defense Studies Center, says the coalition will eventually abandon Afghanistan. He says the U.S. can't succeed in Iraq, but has no escape from the tragedy there. I think they're very different situations, he said. The core difficulties we face in each case are somewhat similar, he says. That is that the resources the West has available and the time frames over which we are prepared to bring them to bear are just way too small to make a difference to the really deep-seated security problems, political problems, social problems that really underpin the crises in each place. Just to vary the diet from outside the bubble a little bit, in case you wondered why Tony Blair was so closely allied with George W. Bush, the answer, finally, religious faith was hugely important to Tony Blair's premiership. The former prime minister reveals in an interview to be broadcast today. He said he was reluctant to discuss it while in office for fear voters would see him as, quote, a nutter, unquote. Blair's former communications chief, Alistair Campbell, once famously told journalists, quote, we don't do God, when asked about the prime minister's beliefs. But Campbell now says Mr. Blair, quote, does do God in quite a big way, asking aides to find a church he can attend every Sunday wherever he is in the world. This is a man, says another close confidant, Peter Mandelson. This is a man who takes a Bible with him wherever he goes, and the last thing at night he will read is from the Bible. In an interview, Blair says, there is no point in me denying it. I happen to have religious conviction. To do this, the prime minister's job properly, you need to be able to separate yourself somewhat from the magnitude of the consequences of the decisions you're taking. For me, having faith was an important part of being able to do that. Campbell told the program, Blair does not appear to be your classic religious sort of guy because he's pretty irreverent, he swears a fair bit, and if he sees an attractive woman, his eye will wander and all that stuff. But at the close circle, always understood there was a part of him that was really, really important. Although the British public are wary of politicians who go on about God, says Campbell. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, finally, one more. Just looking ahead. This is from Jonathan Landay of McClatchy Newspapers, an American outfit, but nobody seems to pick this up, even though Landay's reporting on the run-up to the Iraq War was one of the few he's one of the few guys who got it right, which is why you heard his journalism here. So here he goes again. Despite President Bush's claims that Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons, experts in and out of government say there's no conclusive evidence that Tehran has an active nuclear weapons program. Outside experts, outside of the government, say Iran may have been actively seeking to create a nuclear weapons capacity in the past and still could break out of its current uranium enrichment program and start a weapons program. They too lack definitive proof, but cite a great deal of circumstantial evidence. Four years of IAEA inspections have revealed no conclusive proof of a weapons program. Goes on in great depth to explain it, Jonathan Landay in McClatchy Newspapers. Strangely, outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Another Bushman to leave the nest this year, of course, the embattled, controversial former Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez.
I was loyal to George Bush whenever he'd call, even if he wanted nothing at all. I was loyal on the rise. I was loyal on the fall. 'Cause even I know what the point of the fall is. Give the critics the head of Alberto González. The Geneva Conventions I helped redefine, calling them quaint. I think that quote was mine. 'Cause certain detainees are just over the line. In the room with top lawyers, it's clear where the gall is. In the legalese head of Alberto González.
González.
The first Hispanic was a badge I'd wear with pride. It got me upstairs and it got me inside. In Texas, George Bush named me to his Supreme Court. Could the big one be next? I'd sure need his support. So my advice was the most approving sort. If I wanted the robe, I'd give nothing but solace and let Bush be the head of Alberto González.
González.
We wanted to change prosecutors for friends. A big Senate hearing is where that trail ends. The truth doesn't break, but it certainly bends. I gave a display of what total lack of recall is. Just a memory hole in the head of Alberto González.
González.
The first Hispanic was a badge I'd wear with pride. It got me upstairs and it got me inside. I'll spend time with my family. I'll spend time alone. I'll sit by my computer. I'll sit by my phone, hoping that my old friend will just throw me a bone. Even though I know how unlikely that call is, so I'll just take back the head of Alberto González. Alberto González.
With my heart, the mirror always. safe ground.
Well, there's safety in Hope, Arkansas, home of Bill Clinton, home of Mike Huckabee. Isn't that wild? What's going on there? What's in the water? But this is in the F is for FEMA file. Thousands of travel trailers and manufactured homes parked around and alongside runways at the Hope Municipal Airport is something city officials aren't complaining about because of the money being brought in. FEMA spends $1,889,000 a month to store and maintain the 19,000 vacant mobile homes and travel trailers at the Hope Airport. Most were intended as temporary housing for the victims of Katrina and Rita 2 years ago, but never got there. They're still in Hope. Hope collects monthly rent for the property of about $25,000 with the salary paid to workers FEMA has stationed at Hope. The effect on the local economy is comparable to a small industry. 75 people currently work at the trailer site. Monthly payroll costs are more than $400,000. They stay in the local motels, they eat in the local restaurants, and buy things at the hardware store. It's just like having a business here, says a local official. And the trailers are empty. Takes what? How many people to run a park full of empty trailers? 75? That's more people than are stationed at the trailer parks in New Orleans where there are people. Isn't that wild? Speaking of which, FEMA is now reversing the decision that some found bureaucratically absurd. This week they granted $99,000 to the Aquarium of the Americas in New Orleans that saved taxpayers a bundle by catching replacements for the fish that died during the flooding. The aquarium appealed. The dispute dragged on for 17 months until Carlos Castillo, FEMA's Assistant Director of Disaster Assistance, notified the aquarium in a letter this week that the federal agency would pick up the tab. And finally, among the Bushmen who have departed, ladies and gentlemen, John Bolton, former Assistant Secretary of State, former UN ambassador, who's got a book coming out in which he says he undercut Colin Powell when Powell was Secretary of State because Bolton felt that Powell was interested in using too many carrots and not enough sticks in his approach to Iran, and was dismayed to find that Condi Rice was going to pursue the same approach when he left the State Department at his farewell lunch. He writes in his book, he made a point of ordering carrot soup.
They call me Big John Bolton, the tough guy of my troop. Yes, sticks and stones can break your bones, but so can carrot soup. Stash. I even out the other scores and try to close the loop. All I wanted was a stew of sticks. I end up with carrot soup. All I wanted was a stew of sticks. I end up with carrot soup. Speak soft and carry a carrot, something Roosevelt never said. When you're a superpower, sticks are how the weak are led. But my leader was a weakling. In Nam he was a dupe. I whipped up a stick souffle, and he served me carrot soup. I whipped up a stick souffle, and he served me carrot soup. Rice was one more carrot head, it began to seem unreal. I planned to play the nuke card, she played let's make a deal. Maybe I just tend to have more testosterone than the rest, but pushing folks around is just the thing that I do best. My UN days were just a blaze, but it made my mustache droop. Oh, I served sticks to one and all. They fed me carrot soup. Yes, I served sticks to one and all. They fed me carrot soup. Rice was one more carrot head. It began to seem unreal. I planned to play the nuke card. She played Let's Make a Deal. To that I will not stoop. No, I wrote my book with just one goal. No more carrot soup. So, sticks are what I'm sticking to. It's the end of carrot soup. Yeah, sticks are what I'm sticking to. It's the end. It's the end. It's the end of carrot soup. Soup.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world, through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America, via the shortwave giant WBCQ, 7.415 megahertz, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on XM and Sirius satellite radios. Can I say that? Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like more Bushmen splitting if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. By the way, I'll see you also on the video side this week at www.mydamnchannel.com. And of course, harryshearer.com is the place to get the playlists, this broadcast, and to email the host. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.